This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Brandon Contes.
All righty, welcome to episode 32 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Contes, and this week we have WFAN program director and co-host of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, Spike Eskin, joining us. Spike, thanks so much for coming on our podcast today. And I'm curious, which role are you more associated with? Like, who's in your Twitter mentions more? Is it more people complaining about WFAN-related things, or is it more people complaining about something 76ers-related?
It depends on the day. There have been some days over the last, you know, several months where you would think that it was only WFAN people, and then there are other days where it's different. It's actually pretty weird to have such a separate, like, yeah, two separate groups of people who are in that. You know, there's not really a commonality between the two of them besides me. Right. So a lot of them can be confused when I'm talking about one thing or the other thing. So,
yeah.
So it depends on the day. Definitely depends on the
right.
day.
Yeah, the people complaining about WFAN might not even realize the 76ers influence that you have. And then
yeah,
the same goes for the other way. Is most of the WFAN feedback you get on social media or via email, or whether some of the listeners are still writing actual letters, is it negative or positive?
Well, I think I've found in general that product feedback in general is usually negative. So that was even when I was with WIP, is that when you're happy with something, I think you don't tend to write a letter or an email about it. So, or specifically tweet. Nobody on Twitter is happy about anything.
Yeah.
It's never like, wow, that was a great day of normal WFAN that I had no issues with. They don't send me a message about that. So I think it's no different than it ever has been in that way. Though I do think if the complaint is reasonable enough, and that's usually email and not Twitter, but if the email or the letter is at least in tone, is somebody that I can reply to, then I'd like to reply and engage them. And most people are pretty happy that they were just, you know, heard.
Yeah.
So, but I would say it's mostly negative, but any feedback I've ever gotten product wise is mostly negative.
Yeah, right. I don't think that's too surprising. It is amazing though. Like every time we post a WFAN clip or WFAN related headline, like it is inevitable that people will reply or quote tweet it by saying something along the lines of like that station has gone into the toilet. Yet the attention that WFAN gets in a medium that it, for all intents and purposes is not exactly thriving right now, WFAN still gets covered like it is another local sports team in New York. Like people pay attention to what is being said on WFAN, and people also pay attention to all the roster moves at the station. So I guess for the critics, has WFAN gone to the toilet?
I hope not. I think we're in a good, I think we're in a great place. I think that a lot of times when there's change, people don't like change in general. People in the Northeast specifically are uncomfortable with change. And when things change, I think people's first reaction is that it is bad. And I think that is a natural reaction. And I think with somebody, something as like has so much heritage and so much history as like WFAN, I can understand the discomfort with that. I do think that some of the criticisms can be funny, like they'll make me laugh, something like what happened to the journalistic integrity of WFAN. And I think back, and no disrespect to any of the previous hosts who were here before I was here, but I don't think any, like when you think of the greats, you know, when you think of Summers or Francesa or Mad Dog or whoever it is, or Imus, you don't think, wow, journalistic integrity. Not that they didn't have integrity, but that wasn't sort of the lead with any of it. So I think WFAN is in a great place. I think it makes me happy that largely the news we make now is about what we say and not internal strife. Mm-hmm. It's pretty important to me that from a culture standpoint, that we all support each other and get along. And I think you're not going to be best friends with anybody, but I think that infighting stuff, it can get you headlines, but it can also be a difficult, you know, difficult road to hoe as far as building a team and having sustainability. So if the news that we are making is simply about what we are saying, then largely I will rarely have an issue with it unless we're saying something, I don't want to get canceled for anything, but you know what I mean? If it's sports stuff or if it's opinion, I don't really have an issue with it. So I think WFAN's in a good place. Every metric we have suggests it's in a good place. The hosts feel like they're in a good place. I am enjoying it. So I think we're doing fine. And for anyone who was unhappy with it, I appreciate their passion and that they care about it enough to voice their complaint. You know, I think I rarely, if I'm unhappy with a product that I use, if I voice a complaint, it's because I like the product and I'm disappointed in it. So I can certainly understand that. But like I was talking about with emails, when we made our changes, when Craig left, you know, the emails that I got that said, this is never going to work. This sucks. This guy sucks. That guy sucks or whatever. And I said, I understand what you're saying. Just give it time. And after a few months, I'll get like an email back that says, hey, I actually enjoy this show, or this person who I didn't like at first, I actually like now. So I think to some extent, you just have to roll with the punches in that particular respect and have faith in your belief of what is good and what isn't.
How do you think Evan and Tiki have done as a show together?
Great. Great. I mean, there's a large, runway of improvement they can make, but I don't think that is specific to them. I think it's shows take so long to truly develop rapport and develop roles and develop, you know, all of those things. I think the fact that they have hit the ground running the way that they have, like the show almost instantly sounded, you can put two people together, and I have done this before, and the first week you're like, oh no. And you have to have faith in why you put them together, but it can take a long time. Evan and Tiki, I think it is a testament to their hard work and sort of, and with Sean and Tommy as well, everyone sort of knowing what their role was in the beginning and confidence in that, and sort of the decision to give each other different, you know, some days it's one person who is a focus or is elevated, and some days it's another. So I think they've done a great job. But I still think that there is immense room for them to grow and become like the show, you know? And I think they put in the work every day to do that. So I'm proud of them. I'm happy.
So it could take a while for a show to develop, but how long does it take for you to decide whether or not a show has that potential to grow and develop?
I think it's different for each one of them. You know, I think a lot of it, unfortunately, I talked about metrics and data, and that's one part of it. Unfortunately, a lot of what we do is just gut, you know, on what you think sounds. So you have to know, it's what you hear, but it's also what you know based on talking to the individuals and working with the individuals and seeing their work ethic in all of it. And I think the off-air dynamics are sometimes as important as the on-air dynamics, and seeing how they work together and how they get to where they're going. And I would say that if I have a good intuition about something, it would take me a while and some very bad signs off-air for me to say, I don't think it can get there. You know, I don't think I have a number, but I can tell you, and I've brought this up before, but the morning show in Philly, show to Cameron and John Ritchie, mm-hmm. they started this as a midday show, and I hired them, and they didn't know each other when I hired them together. And that show was like not good at all in the beginning, but it took a while, but both hosts and the producer, James, were so committed to making it right and sort of understanding why it might or might not work and the areas for them to grow, that it was worth the commitment to pushing them forward, you know? That's a long answer, but I guess the short answer is I don't know what that time is. You just sort of have to follow your gut.
When we write about Sean Morash, should we refer to him as a WFAN producer, a host, or do we just go with contributor?
He's both.
What is he? Is he a host on that show?
He's both. He is clearly, as you can tell just by listening to it, meant to have a very significant on-air role.
Yeah.
I think the show, when it comes down to it, is about Evan and Tiki. But Sean, it's sort of like a boring, weird radio thing. But it's part of setting the expectation about how much and when everybody is involved. And I think a three-person, if you're thinking about as a three-person show and not a 2+1, those shows are different and very hard to manage, you know, when it's more than two people. And if one person isn't the, you know, in Philly, I'm sorry for using, just for context, Angelo was clearly the lead and the focal point, and everybody else was underneath Angelo, which made having more than two people tenable. But when everybody is sort of the same level and it's all of these people, it's very difficult for everyone to find their space and find their position. So I think with Sean, it was more about sort of defining the role up front,
yeah,
and saying that his exposure is not the same as Evan and Tiki, but like in terms of on-air time, but his role, just like Tommy's role, and Tommy Lugar doesn't talk as much. The roles are all very important, but they're all very different. So he's both.
Were you like kind of concerned at all how he would fit going from the DA show to afternoons on WFAN, just because like his role did kind of was a more of a slow increase. It kind of developed on the DA show. Mm-hmm. And then now kind of like throwing him into two new hosts, like Damon Amendolara definitely found what he could use from Morash and like mm-hmm. really almost exploited it.
Yep.
So was there like a concern that now like putting hit that personality with two new hosts that as that third voice, that it would take a lot more time to kind of fit?
No concern, no worry. I think what we did was, it's sort of like if you take a player and draft them young and give them to the first team, there's so much more work to do for the first 5 years of that player learning how they fit than for the second team and the second coach and the second player. They don't have to start at zero again. So Damon was excellent in figuring that out with Sean. Right.
Yeah.
Because Sean had been around. It's not like he wasn't in the building and had moments, but it took Damon sort of recognizing what was great about Sean and putting him in that role. I think really good hosts do that. Find, you know, put the other players in the show in a role where they can succeed. So I think I was very confident. Evan was very confident. And to that end, because he's in the building, we all knew Sean. It's not like Evan right. didn't know Sean. Tiki knew Sean just fine. And Tommy knew Sean. Tommy's like close with Sean. So I think everybody knew what he was capable of, knew what the role was painted very clearly what the role for Sean was. And so I had very little concern that he would integrate himself in the right way. And he shows a remarkable amount of restraint, by the way. He's an opinionated guy who was, when he is on his own, is incredibly capable of just hosting by himself. He does it plenty and he's good at it. And to sit there and wait for the right spot, you know, and sort of speak when spoken to is not easy for somebody who's good at it. And I think he does a great job at it.
Yeah. And I think Evan and Tiki for two new hosts together, trying to kind of find their own footing and their own chemistry. I think they've done a good job of giving him that space to still mm-hmm. To still have that airtime.
Yeah, and there are days where he's like, yeah, it's funny. Of all the roles I've had, I was the third person on a show with Josh Innes and Hollis Thomas in
right.
afternoons at WIP. And there were days when I knew that Josh was going to need somebody to push back on him on whatever his opinion was. And I knew Hollis wasn't going to do it in that particular role. So I was like, okay, I'll do it. But then there were other times where he and Hollis had it going on and I wouldn't talk for 90 minutes because I knew that moment did not need me. And I think the people who are in that role have to know. And by the way, it's an advantage too. If you only have to speak when you have something good, then the audience's perception of you, it's a lot easier to sort of craft what that is if you don't have to talk quite as much, you know.
Were you aware of the attention that WFAN got before coming here? Like, is WIP covered the same way?
It's one thing to be aware. It's another thing to actually like be in the middle of it. WIP is covered in the same way. I think it is the way in that it is apples to apples in that is that WIP is to Philadelphia what WFAN is to New York. Those two things are the same. But New York is just much, much bigger. There are more people. And having the New York Post writing about you and having Andrew Marchand, and Ryan, who are like really, like Andrew Marchand is the best media reporter, like sports media reporter that there is. Yep. And having that guy like snooping around or whatever and writing headlines, and the New York Post, which is just an immense generator of attention. It is good. I'm glad that they do it, but it is sort of certainly something to behold. And it's one thing to know about it intellectually, and it's another thing emotionally to have that attention on you. So I knew, but I didn't know until I was in the middle of it.
Yeah, sort of. I was curious if you consider all that attention and even the like polarity that surrounds FAN at times. Like, is it a good thing to get all that attention and coverage, or does it become a bit of a hurdle for the station at some times?
I think overall it is positive. We matter. You know, you said it from the beginning. I think the best sports radio stations matter in a way that is different than a normal content thing does. We drive passion. I used to say, and you said covered like a sports team. I used to say in Philly that IP was the, you know, depending on how many pro sports franchises you count, we were the fifth pro sports franchise in Philadelphia. And I think the same way about WFAN in New York. I think it is. And when you think about sports teams that people love, you know, when you're talking about the Jets or the Giants or the Yankees or the Mets or the Knicks or the Nets, the Islanders, Rangers, Devils, the conversation around those teams, if you look at it and compare it to us, the negatives are incredibly loud when they're loud. And much of the coverage online, if you were to look at an online fan base for a team and you didn't know anything about it, you would say that these people hate this team. They hate it. You don't know why they're involved in it. It must not bring them, it only brings them anger. They only disappoint them. But deep down, there's so much joy that they derive from it. And I think that's where you have to separate the reaction that you see online from the consistent enjoyment they get when they're not reacting to it sometimes. So I think it can be a negative if the coverage is dishonest or I think that can be a negative. And I think from a human emotional toll, the people who work at WFAN, is one thing to say, don't ignore that stuff and just say it. It's another thing to live it. And when you're seeing it and you're feeling it, it can take a toll. And that's just being human. And there are some times that I wish that the host could just go to work and do their show and have people enjoy it or not enjoy it and not have to worry about the reaction to it. Yeah. All the time. So I'm glad that people care enough to react, but I think emotionally it can be difficult. It can be difficult for me, you know, and I don't get, you know, a tenth of the stuff that Sean or Sal or Gio or Boomer, like I don't get a tenth of it that they get, and it's hard for me. So I can only imagine what it's like for them.
One of the more recent examples of WFAN garnering a lot of attention was when Carl Banks decided to stop his weekly spot on the midday show. So would you say, was that whole thing overblown, or was the coverage around that warranted in your opinion?
Well, it's hard to say what's warranted. People clicked on it, right? You could attest to that. Yeah. And I think New York Post could attest to that. So people were obviously interested. So I can't say it wasn't warranted. I do think I think overall the reaction to it was probably outsized from the actual like event. The when they did it, Sal and Brandon, they knew immediately afterward that it was like, shoot, shouldn't have done that. Went on the air and said they shouldn't have done it. Reached out to Carl, said, I apologize for it. You know, like we had numerous conversations with Carl where both on and off air, Brandon and Sal obviously on air with me off air, where they were like, sorry for this, shouldn't have gone there. And Carl responded, I get it, it's cool, we're good. So numerous conversations, which Sal and Brandon kept off air, kept those conversations like off air. You know, they said it shouldn't have gone there on air. They knew it. I knew it. I had mentioned to them previously. I was like, eh, that's like the guest stuff. Maybe not be as quite as contentious as it seems. Be contentious with each other. Be contentious with the caller. Maybe not. So they could feel it going there. They were disappointed that it went there. And I thought the reaction to it for a number of different reasons kept going maybe longer than it should have, or that I would have liked it to be.
Yeah.
I think if you listen to it, you can understand what happened. If you listen to the entire segment, you'd be like, oh, I can kind of hear what happened there. But it was what it was. Carl seems happy, you know, fine, you know, good, we're good, fine, happy. But it was certainly a ride.
Were you surprised that he decided to not come back on?
No. I think he would tell you that, and he said it himself, actually, that that's not really what he doesn't want to debate back and forth with them. Yeah. Like that wasn't what he wanted to do. And I think if we could go back and say, what is our aim? That wasn't our aim either, which is why we were disappointed that it went there. It just sort of happened. That's what happens when you argue about sports, right? It's like sometimes it gets there. But I think after talking to him in the beginning, I could have sort of felt like it might go that way. So I wasn't surprised. But he was, just to reiterate, he was kind about the entire thing.
Yeah.
He said, when we spoke about it, he said, love Brandon. He said, don't know Sal that much, but have respect for Sal, have respect for WFAN, all good, we're fine, just not something I wanted to do anymore. And that's as much as he said publicly afterwards, so it's all good.
I think one of the big things with that was the fact that he had been doing it for so long. Like, mm-hmm. Had this been the first season and he just decided, you know what, this isn't a fit, sports radio isn't something that I want to do, like, it wouldn't have been a big deal. But the fact that he had been on the midday show for 15 years or whatever, however long it was, and then now in Brandon and Sal's first NFL season together is when he decided to stop doing it. I think that's part of why.
Yeah, I understand it for sure. Like I understand why the reaction was so surprised, but think of the number of hosts we've been through in that show from beginning to end, you know, from when you're my dog, I'm sorry.
That's right. I keep muting myself occasionally because I'm waiting for my dogs to do the same thing.
He just got home. My wife just got home from being out of Philly for Christmas, and he's going nuts every time somebody walks past the front. So, so you think about the number, even just in my time, this is the third show since I've gotten here in middays. So it's Moose and Maggie, then it was Brandon and Tiki, and now it's Brandon and Sal, and before that was Joe and Evan, and then there was CMB, and there's all these different shows. There's no reason why we should assume that whatever worked for a show as far as guest or structure 15 years ago should also work for a show today.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason.
Yeah,
I have a tremendous respect for the fact that he did it the entire time, absolutely, and it does show that the decision shouldn't be taken lightly, but you know, I if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And he won't do it anymore. So I didn't really know what else to do after that, you know?
Yeah. Did you think that they were entertaining radio segments, Carl's weekly spots?
Yeah. I mean, like he provides, I think Carl is a good color broadcaster in that he is he is not afraid to be critical of the Giants when you're listening to, it was one of the first things that struck me when I got up here and I listened to it. And as somebody who played and I have, you know, I've worked with a lot of hosts or air talent who played, they do provide insight that nobody else can provide. It's on us to make the spot entertaining. That's on us to put him in the correct position to have him be able to deliver the sort of information that becomes insightful for, entertaining is a weird word, but like at least insightful for the listener. I think you could probably say that we probably weren't good enough at that, you know, at a certain point in putting him in the right spot. I mentioned that earlier, and just in terms of knowing what every piece that you have is valuable. So, Casillas started coming on with us. He does a great job, and I'm confident Brandon and Sal can figure it out without that spot. But yeah, I thought it was good.
Yeah, I think I even mentioned that in some of the articles that we wrote about it, was the fact that I always felt that Carl was really good on game day. I thought he was an excellent analyst because he is willing to be critical during the game. To be fair, I have not listened to him on the midday show in a while, but when I used to listen every single week when he was with Joe and Evan, mm-hmm. it usually sounded like he was reluctant to be critical when he was doing those weekly spots.
I think one of the things that's probably true, one of the things that is difficult when you're in that position is when you're doing the game broadcast and largely everyone around you is like sort of positive, it's much easier for you to be a dissenting view because there's balance there. But if he comes on after a loss and Brandon and Sal are obliterating the Giants for 2.5 days for the game that they lost, you know, it's one thing to say it's contrarian, but I think that there's like I'm not saying that he's contrarian, but I'm saying like, all right, he probably hears 2 days of this and he's like, well, they're too negative now.
Yeah.
And they've gone too far. So I need to provide the other side of this, which I find myself doing just on the podcast when people sort of go too far one way, even if I don't necessarily believe that a thing is good, it's not as bad as they say. And I think that probably happens sometimes too. But that's this weird thing with sports radio, which is largely opinion and sort of opinion pushed to its extremes. And then what Carl does for a job, which is not largely opinion, it's largely analysis. And I think that there's a different context to what he's doing during the game to what he was doing with us.
Did you find when Gio came out the next day and strongly defended Sal, is that like, oh, this is great team building, or was that some unnecessary fuel to the fire?
I was happy that Gio stood up for the other members of his team without any specific endorsement or discredit of the specific things that he said, just leaving it alone. But the fact that he did it, again, when I got here, and this, I'm not saying that this is me, I'm saying that it is certainly a change. When I got here, the things that I saw in the post that were covering WFAN were like the morning show host and the afternoon show host obliterating each other and hating each other. And now, okay, we're in the post, but it's because Gio stood up for another member of the air staff and that show. And I thought that was a positive, and I was happy that Gio stood up for the show.
In general, do you find that weekly paid interviews with athletes and coaches and managers, are they good radio segments? Are they valuable to the listener? Is that something that you think is good for sports radio?
Depends on the player and the coach, and there's some that have been great. You know, we've had some that have been really good. You have some that are not so good. A lot depends on a lot just depends on the player and the coach, you know, and I don't think we need them ever.
Yeah.
Like I don't think they're necessary for us, for our product to be at its best. But I think hearing from the people who played the game and people who coached, if that person is like expository in what they say, if they're saying real things and they're answering real questions and they understand the context of what they're doing, I think it can be great. But there's also times where it's terrible, you know? So,
yeah.
So it just depends.
Yeah. And I think for maybe some smaller market stations, it probably makes a lot of sense. Like you're able to use it as a promotional tactic saying sure. that this player or coach is coming on. It feels somewhat unnecessary for WFAN.
I think, again, it just depends on the context. Like our Kansas City station has Pat Mahomes on every week.
Yeah.
And Carrington Harrison has Pat Mahomes on every week. He's the best quarterback in football. The team is by far the dominant conversation in New York or in Kansas City every single week. Pat Mahomes would have to be pretty terrible on the air for it not to be valuable.
Right.
Like if you could look at New York and you could say, well, what if they gave you Aaron Judge every week? It would be hard to say no to, even though Aaron Judge typically is pretty straightforward in his interviews. It would be very hard for me to say, because of his stature and how much he means, it would be very hard to say no. But there's very few athletes and coaches and managers that I think are of the stature that you take them whether they're good or whether they're bad. Most of them are, is this person a good person to talk to? Jason Kelce and Brandon Graham called in to WIP for years, but they're both like incredibly honest. They're both part of the fabric of the radio station and they're interesting beyond the fact of who they are. So I think it depends on the situation.
Were you surprised by the uproar, I guess I'll ask if you saw the uproar after Andrew Marchand reported that Aaron Rodgers has been getting paid for his weekly spots on the Pat McAfee show?
I wasn't surprised because I think people just don't understand how that works. It's just like it's behind the curtain.
Yeah.
It's a coach, a manager, or a player who is coming on a radio station or a TV station every single week is either getting paid directly by the outlet or it is a contractual agreement between the team and the outlet that is in that person's contract. Every single one. There are some times when they call in just for the fun of it, like a one-off here and there, or a PR is lining something up. But if it's every week at the same time in the same place, they're getting paid. So, and I wasn't even that surprised that, did Marchand even report the exact number?
He didn't report the exact number. He wrote something about the fact that he's made over $1 million. I don't think he was clear about whether that was per season or total.
Right.
I think if it's total, it's definitely not, because this was Aaron's, I think, fourth season with McAfee.
Right.
If he was making $250,000 a year, definitely not surprising.
No.
$1 million would probably be, I would assume, the record. But even still, considering what he's meant to that show the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, Pat McAfee's obviously successful on his own, but the amount of appointments and news and earned media that they have received based on that call, that appearance alone,
right,
is likely worth every penny that they have spent on it. But again, if you think about quarterbacks in the NFL, how many, not because of star power, but based on what they say, would generate that sort of news? And it's really just because of who Aaron Rodgers is as an interview and less his stature as a quarterback. I think it's like this combination where he's a great quarterback, obviously, and also says things. It's a combination, but he's clearly been worth it to them. So yeah, I guess I wasn't surprised because I don't think people understand that mechanic that players get paid, but, and coaches get paid, but it wasn't surprising to me that he did get paid.
Has Aaron Rodgers been a welcome topic addition to the New York sports radio scene?
He played what, three plays?
Yeah,
we talked about him all year. Yeah,
right. Can you imagine what it'll be like if Aaron actually does play a full season in New York, or like where people can break down what happens on the field every week instead of just breaking down what he says on McAfee's show?
Would be excellent. It certainly provided a lot of fodder for us this year. I do wish, people have this perception that it's good for sports radio when the team is bad. And that is, it's more interesting. It's sort of like easier to come up with topic generation if things are bad. But in terms of overall success, you're more successful when the teams are good. The best case scenario is the team is good and has some down moments that make you question your belief. And ultimately, from a narrative standpoint, like they face, you know, a difficult situation, they overcome it, they achieve, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, I would love for fans' sake, for Aaron Rodgers to play well on the Jets. Would the best of both worlds then, right? You have him doing the talking all the time, but then also playing well would be great.
Yeah. Is all of your content listening consumed by WFAN and CBS Sports Radio, or are there non-Odyssey sports shows or hosts and personalities that you're checking in on?
From a sports standpoint, it almost takes up all of my time. And honestly, from a like just a mental standpoint, the idea that I could consume. So I have CBS Sports Radio and WFAN, but also I'm the format vice president for Odyssey. So it's not supervisory, but sort of like advisory role for all of our sports stations. So I also have to check in on those stations too and listen to those stations. So not every week all the time, but it certainly fills up a lot of it. So in terms of my outside listening of work, most of it is non-sports because I just to give myself a break, you know?
Sure. National or local, is there one sports radio host? We could throw podcasts in there too. Is there one who is not necessarily just the best or your favorite, but one who you consider the most talented?
Oh, there's so many talented people that are in different ways. I find the number of different ways that you can be good at it to be pretty fascinating. You know, I will not answer this because there's so many of them, and I don't want them to be. I don't want to mention one and then not mention the other. I've been so lucky to work with so many talented people just at the radio stations that I've worked at, and the ability for them to be good and so different is amazing to me. A lot of people get into this field because they love sports. I love sports, don't get me wrong, but it isn't the sports part of it that has made this part of the journey interesting to me. It's like the work, it's the content part of it. And sports is the conduit to it, but it is not like the be all end all. So to be able to take that source material and be popular and good so many different ways, I think is amazing. So there's a ton, I guess.
Yeah, no, and I think that is definitely just the way they are all so different. Like you look at the Dan Le Batard show where it has like that kind of more community aspect, a little bit Stern like at times, in the way he builds a show. You look at Colin Cowherd where he has the analogies that the and kind of quirky takes. So I think they're all super different. Jim Rome sounds nothing like Cowherd or Le Batard. Dan Patrick is totally different.
Yeah.
But they are still all super talented and great at what they do.
Even the evolution of those hosts as time has gone on, like Le Batard has evolved, but you mentioned Jim Rome who does the show for us at CBS Sports Radio, who was really sort of from a national standpoint, the first like cool sports radio host, you know, he seemed edgy and young and different. And even his presentation, while it does have kernels of his previous iterations, he's evolved in just an incredible way and is a different host today than he was a decade ago or 20 years ago. And that's an amazing evolution to hear. And everybody you mentioned, really, really talented in different ways.
Did you ever discuss a permanent or semi-permanent role at WFAN with Stu Gotts?
No.
How did you think he did filling
in? Well, he's under contract anyway. So, yeah. He did great with Gio. He had a lot of fun. He loves WFAN. I think he would tell you that. You know, he's a huge WFAN guy. It was really fun to have him in there for a couple of days. It was fun to meet him. I'd never met him before. Fun to work with him. I think he's done, you know, I talked about people putting them in their role. Levitard has sort of like created a role and a character for Stugatz over the years, which he has, you know, filled in quite nicely. So, and I don't think any of the time that I've known Stugatz, we've even had opportunity at Fan or specific opportunity that would be good for him. I'm sure he'd do a great job, but I've never discussed it with him.
Would you welcome Mike Francesa back on a part-time basis?
I've never talked to Mike. I think Mike is obviously a legend. I think Mike, I would have to have a relationship with Mike, obviously, to speak on that further. I can say that a lot of the hosts, both at Fan and WIP, who were once sort of on the forefront, have those sort of more specialized roles, and it works out pretty well. Beningo has a specialized role. Summers, yep, with us has a specialized role. In Philly, my father has a very specific role. He used to do Afternoon Drive. Mm-hmm. Glenn Mack now has a very, you know, specific role. Even Al Morgani has now sort of evolved into that. So I think there's room for it. How cool would it be to be listening to one of our day parts and like hear Mike come on and talk about one of those things? I think it would be awesome, but I don't know Mike, unfortunately. And I don't know if that would ever happen, but I would think it would be silly to not sort of, like, entertain it, you know?
That's part of why I ask, just the fact that Joe Beningo, Steve Summers do have roles at FAN still. And being that your dad, still has a prominent role there in Philly, despite leaving, what was it, more than 10 years ago that he left the afternoon show there.
Yeah.
So just curious to see if you would have interest in bringing Francesa back and in some sort of capacity. It seems like it's something that he would be reluctant to do at this point because he left and came back multiple times already.
Unfortunately, he has
a podcast. I feel like it also would be beneficial for him to have an avenue to promote that.
Yeah, I mean, he probably just has to do what he feels like doing at this point. You know, he's had an amazing career, probably made tons of money. He's a bit like, he's probably doing fine. But if I got a phone call one day and it was like, hey, Spike, this is Mike Francesa, I'd love to come on every week. Like, I would certainly entertain that phone call. You know, I think it would be awesome. But you know, Joe B wanted to do it and Steve wanted to do it, you know, and it's like they're enjoying it. And I think you have to enjoy it at that point. So I don't know him. I don't really have any emotional connection to the leaving, coming back and anything that happened prior. I'm a different person at a different time, but I think I would be crazy to not like sort of entertain that if that was something he wanted to do.
You left WIP just before having to find Angelo Cataldi's replacement. You came here and then you were tasked with replacing Craig Carton. Was that a surprise when Craig decided to leave less than 3 years after he came back to FAN?
I wasn't planning on it, you know, but I was so happy to get to work with Craig. You know, Craig worked with my father years and years and years ago at WIP in Philly. So I've been aware of Craig for a long time. And I think Craig and I got along great. I loved working with Craig. Craig is obsessed with doing a good show, which it's hard to not love somebody who isn't obsessed with doing a good show and creative and opinionated. And I had a lot of people like warning me or whatever. I had who didn't work there previously, who don't work at Fan now.
Yeah.
And I had no problem with working with Craig. I, you know, knowing, I think I wasn't surprised after I knew better, you know, was in there for a year and knew better about the situation and what sort of he was facing moving forward and the opportunities that he may have. And so I wasn't surprised, but the one thing that I've learned over the years is that you just have to be prepared for anybody to leave at any time. And, you know, Chris Carlin, you know, I hired Chris in Philly and to work with Ike, and a year in, Chris was gone. And one of the reasons that was able to move on is because you know, I had a big board, you know, of well, what would I do if this happened? What would I do if that happened? So I think, you know, in true preparation, we had a good bit of time to replace Craig, but in back of the mind, mental preparation, what if this happens? I had even longer. So, you know, we had, I had ideas. So
at what point did those preparations kind of start? Cause I think he started the FS1 show September. Then it was in like maybe sometime in the spring, I think Marchand first reported that like he might have a chance to go exclusively to Fox Sports. And then it was early June that it was reported that he actually was leaving. So at what point did you start thinking about his replacement in that, on that calendar?
Well, without sort of saying when I knew what I knew, I think I would honestly, and this is not a lie, the minute that he started the TV show, I was like, this could be a reality, because I was just seeing his day every day. And he would get up at 2:30 in the morning or something, or 3 in the morning. And it's one thing to do a morning show and then go home, but he would do that entire show, get to work at 11 in the morning, then do another show until 6:30, get home. You know, he lives way out in the middle of fucking nowhere in Jersey, so like even further out than me. So it would take him, I don't know, an hour to get home or whatever. So at the earliest, he's home at 7:30, maybe closer to 8. And then he has to figure out what's going on in sports and then get up at 2:30 in the morning again. So at that point, I think our only chance was if for some reason the Fox show didn't work, but it didn't seem like it was going to be tenable for like the long haul. I could see it working for a year, which it almost did, maybe 2 years. If there was an endpoint, sort of like a long distance relationship, long distance relationship can succeed if you know eventually you're going to move in together and when it's going to happen. Open-ended, there was no way it was going to work with him doing both shows.
Were external options considered, or did you always want to replace him internally?
We considered a million different things. Yeah. Considered a million different things.
And were you part of the decision in replacing Angelo Cataldi, even though you weren't, just because you mentioned that you have a bit of an advisory role with Audacy. So is that something that they had reached out to you about?
I was, because of my closeness to the evolution of that radio station and my role, I was, I would say, involved in like in those conversations. Ultimately, that was the decision of Rod and David in Philadelphia as to what to do. But you would be stupid to have to make a move like that and not consider every smart person that you have in your company who you know, has some sort of insight as to what. So I was certainly involved in the conversations and was happy with where it landed, but that was ultimately, you know, their decision. Nobody, I am not in a position at Audacy where I can tell other markets what to do. And I never would. They're smart down there, and I think they made a good decision.
So with external options being considered, we'll go back to FAN for replacing Craig. Is that something that do you, because like I brought up Stu Gotts before, you mentioned he's under contract. So like that's somebody that you've never had any conversations with about a permanent role or anything like that. Do you put feelers out? Like, do you reach out to people whether they're under contract or not? Or are you just kind of say like, this is something that could potentially be open and you wait for people to come to you?
It's sort of both. You know, I think you have your big board of people who you would love for them to be available. I think you can sort of do a soft reach out where you find out if somebody's under contract and how long it is so that you don't violate anything or put that person in a bad situation where you ask a question that you shouldn't be asking. You could do that. If you can't find out that answer, you reach out, like, I guess, sort of directly, find out how they're interested. And you really just sort of like, you want to start with this big board of people who you may consider in any sort of role. And then you whittle it down based on, well, that person wouldn't even work. That person, you know, is under contract. That person may work, may not work, maybe isn't interested. And then you start to think about all of the dynamics in that decision, whether you want to bring in somebody externally or whether you think it's better to elevate internally. Like, I think we made the radio station. It's hard to say that with losing Craig. Obviously, you lose Craig, you lose this major talent, but I think we improved overall the radio station when we were able to do what we did. So you consider a lot, you know.
Do you have that big board handy that you could hold up for the camera?
No, I'm sorry.
was Chris Russo on the big board?
I would not comment on anything on the big board on who was. Nice try, but I would not comment on. And that isn't I want to be clear, that is not a confirmation or a denial. you could name 100 people and I will give the same answer.
Have you thought about having to replace Boomer Esiason? And that's not that he's slowing down at all, but just like the reality of the fact that he's 62 years old. You got to think at some point in the not too distant future, he's going to decide that he's tired of waking up to do morning radio.
Boomer's a beast. Watches more sports, as much sports as any person that I could imagine doing mornings. Like I come in before the show and he'll say something to me. He'll go, "How the end of that Nick game?" And I was like, "Why the fuck were you up for the end of that Nick game, man? Like, go to bed." I don't know. He loves it. He loves it. He's incredibly important to the radio station. You know, Angela didn't retire until he's after 70. So, you know, I think you can, for any position at the radio station, you can sort of like lightly consider what would happen if, but he has never intimated to me in any circumstance that he is planning on not doing this. I think the goal would be to get him to do it as long as he is capable and wants to do it. So
I think Craig actually previously predicted that Boomer was going to retire by the end of 2023. So do you have anything to announce?
I'm confident that Boomer will be at work on January 2nd. So I can give you that scoop. Boomer, unless he's decided something that I don't know about, Boomer will be at work the first work day of 2024.
Should local radio still be an appealing platform for retired athletes that are looking to get into media, or is podcasting kind of stealing all of those?
No, of course they should be if they want to work, you know, like it's work, but it also comes with a cultural relevance that I think it's difficult for, it's depending on the market, to reach on a podcast. You know, I think there's something about the amount of exposure, where 20 hours a week is a lot. The fact that you stumble into people who are not like sort of listening on purpose is the wrong thing, but just sort of the casual, nobody casually listens to a podcast. You know, they either on purpose listen or they don't listen. And I think it's very difficult for any podcast to sort of have the heritage and cultural relevance in a city that the biggest sports radio stations do. But it's a lot of work. You know, it depends on what they want to do. I'm lucky enough, you mentioned Boomer. It's a commitment to do 4 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
It's hard. You can't just be doing it because your playing career is over, you're 35, you don't know what to do with yourself. That's a reason to try it, but not a reason to say this is definitely what I want to do. But Boomer, Tiki, Ike in Philly, John Ritchie in Philly have all these, I'm just mentioning people that I've worked with directly, yep, have all showed a desire to be good at this and to want to do this and to have this be their career. And I think that is, it's a lot of athletes don't want to do that, but I think it's absolutely a good avenue for what to do with your life every day, you know, what to make it, have a second career. Absolutely. I think if you ask Tiki or Boomer or Ike or John and say, "Are you happy you made this decision? Do you want to keep doing it?" Every single one of them would say yes.
ESPN New York is planning to drop their 98.7 signal later in 2024. They're going to revert back to using 1050 and then focus on pushing their content on digital platforms. Do you think 660 and 101.9, are those signals vital to WFAN's success?
I can only speak to ours. Being on the radio exposes you to a lot of people. You know, there might be one day in 10 years where, you know, it changes a little bit every year, where our streaming audience grows a little bit, you know, and is a larger percentage. But as of now, it's not even like, and we have a massive streaming audience at WFAN, yeah, and, you know, but it's not what the radio audience is. So I can't speak to what their plan is. I'm not in those meetings, and, you know, they obviously have reasons but being on 660, being on 101.9, and being on the internet seems like good for us, you know.
When did you start podcasting, and what made you start podcasting? Because you were definitely on that train before it became like everybody has a podcast, and
yeah,
even two.
I started in 2009 when I was, or maybe 2010 when I was at WYSP. I was sort of bored doing music radio, and we started doing podcasts. We did a Eagles podcast called Time's Yours. I did with the promotions director, a guy named Lee. And then when I got hired at WIP, I did it for reps. So we did Time's Yours. I did a gambling podcast called The Degenerate. That was 2011 or 2012. And we started The Ricky in 2013. So it's been a long time, 15 years. You know,
could you have foreseen what podcasting was going to kind of turn into then? Like, did you think, and could you have also foreseen what your podcast was going to turn into? Did it seem like something that had the potential to grow into being such an influential podcast for Sixers fans?
I don't think you could ever, I couldn't have ever imagined what the Ricky could have evolved into. I'm happy that it did. And there were signs about a year in that it was more than we had anticipated, you know, like that it was connecting in a way that was special, but I would never have gathered that it would have been the way it is. You know, I feel incredibly blessed that it has been, and that people still listen is crazy. And I would have never guessed that podcasting would have been what it is, but it does show, you know, the difference between mass media and specialized, sort of targeted to one audience thing. But I feel incredibly lucky that people still listen to that podcast.
Have you had JJ Redick on your podcast?
No, we have not.
Do you like JJ Redick? Do you think he's good?
He's
in media.
He obviously works very hard, and I give him credit for building a big podcast. I do not find him personally to be somebody I like listening to, but he makes me mad. So he's clearly like doing something correctly, right? I would be, for him to get that emotional reaction out of me when nobody else does, clearly means that he is doing something right. I don't think it's right, but it must be right. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the for him to get me as a person who knows how to get other people, like, and still I bite into it and buy into it, it is obviously meaningful. I don't enjoy when he's on a game and I don't listen to his podcast, but it obviously works. So I give him credit. As a true hater, I give him credit.
Sorry, you are to JJ Redick's podcast with the people quote tweeting WFAN videos that yes. FAN has gone to the toilet.
Yes, to some extent, yes.
And I don't remember when I found this out, but it must have came up on FAN at some point. But you used to be a Knicks fan?
Yeah, when I was growing up in high school, I would say probably until my early 20s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, John Starks is like my favorite. You can't see it, but I have a giant John Starks poster on my wall here. And I guess it was like my best friends in high school were Bulls fans. And at the time, that was like a thing. You would be like a 49ers. I'm 47. You'd be a 49ers fan or a Bulls fan.
Yeah.
And like I remember watching the Knicks because they liked the Bulls so much and just having this emotional attachment to that team. And I love that team, you know, and then I, you know, grew with them, you know, into the eras that followed were not quite as fun as that era was. But yeah, I was a Knicks fan for a while.
Is Joe Beningo aware that you're a flip-flopping sports fan? Because like, I feel like that piece of information would cause him to go on strike or something.
I think that's what caused
a rift between him and Fireman Ed a while back.
You know, the thing is, I'm just honest about it. So I like, rather than lie about yeah. what happened, I feel like I'm just honest about what happened. And moving away from Philadelphia, you know, the first time when I lived in Chicago and then I have to actually do the Ricky, I'm sorry. But moving away from Philadelphia made me appreciate Philadelphia more. And I would say that moving away in 06, 07 really sort of honed in my appreciation for the city and for the teams. And it changed it after that.
It's just last thing, if you yep. have a second to say, Joe Beningo revealing some of his text messages from Robert Saleh, is that great radio or a bit of a sleazy move?
not something I would have done, but it was great radio. It gave us, you know, when the coach is answering questions at a press conference about text messages he sent to one of your hosts, things are going fine. So I wouldn't have done it. I would have not have advised him to do it, but you know, I also wouldn't have been texting Joe after every game. Yeah. So I think they probably both share.
That definitely seems like poor judgment.
Yeah. Not number one judgment.
All right, Spike, you were great. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
That is Spike Eskin. I'm Brandon Contis. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to this podcast. Please also subscribe to Awful Announcing's YouTube page. But regardless of how you consume Awful Announcing and the Awful Announcing Podcast, thanks for listening and be good.
Thanks for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast. For the latest news spanning the sports media landscape and more, check out awfulannouncing.com and follow us at awfulannouncing.com.